There are many events in the region scheduled to observe today's Veterans Day. One service scheduled at Washington University this evening is largely the work of one man. James Peterson is a former Marine who served in Iraq and who left the service but returned to Iraq and Afghanistan as a civilian contractor. He came home suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. He's currently a graduate student at Washington University, where he is also president of the student veterans organization, WUVETS. That's Washington University Vets. James, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I don't know. Do you say Happy Veterans Day? I suppose that's in order.
I guess so. I think I just found out that you're a Marine, so I would like to say Happy Birthday to you. But yeah, I guess Happy Veterans Day is the way to say it.
Yeah. Well, I'll thank you at the outset for your service.
I know it
certainly changed your life in many ways, didn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Was it the time you served as a Marine in Iraq that you think led to the PTSD, or was it going back as a contractor? Because I know the people who did that had a tough time.
That's a really good question. There were definitely parts of my time in Iraq as a Marine that I struggled with for years. In the Post-Dispatch article that came out this morning, it describes my first day at Evergrey Prison, where we took over 40 mortars and 22 Iraqis died, 98 were wounded, and that haunted me for years. But then again, when I was a contractor for 5 years, there were many, many months that went by where I was rocketed every single day and several people died on my base. So probably a pretty even combination of both.
Right. We'll get back to all of that in a moment, but I was curious at the outset to get some understanding of how non-veterans at the university react to you and people like you.
That is a very good question. So I was probably in high school when a lot of my classmates were born, which is kind of interesting. Going into the Brown School, which is, you know, definitely a liberal-leaning school, being School of Social Work, I was pretty nervous to even admit that I was a veteran. But little by little, I started, it would come up in my classes, and surprisingly, people were very receptive to it and curious, and they would ask me questions, and they were very cautious about asking me questions. I never got the typical, "Did you kill anybody?" Mm-hmm. They were very respectful, and especially the administration has been just phenomenal. They've been doing anything that we ask to try to bring attention to veterans' issues.
Do you think the fellow students have the respect that the vets, or give the respect that the veterans are entitled to?
I do, and that was surprising to me going to WashU. The students have been great. All of them have been very respectful. My Facebook page today is filled with well wishes for Veterans Day.
Right. Well, that is certainly good to hear. Let's go back to the service, because you mentioned Abu Ghraib, the prison that became an infamous place and an infamous part of the story. Were you there before or after the incident that was so well publicized, the photographs and the disclosure of torture?
So my unit was we were about 30 miles west of Abu Ghraib while that was going on. And then we were at a place called Takhadam and Habaniya, and then we were involved in the first Battle of Fallujah in April. But then after that story of the abuse went on 60 Minutes, they moved my unit to Abu Ghraib Prison immediately to protect the prison itself, because it was just a hornet's nest. The Iraqis, and rightfully so, were very angry, and the prison was attacked every single day after that.
And attacked
so they moved us there to protect the prison after the abuse happened.
The prison was attacked because in an attempt to
there are a
free
few different
prisoners.
Theories. That was one of them. There were several coordinated attacks against the prison where they would use vehicle IEDs, car bombs, to try to blast a hole through the wall, accompanied by just volleys of mortars and mortars and mortars. Luckily, those didn't work, but also just to kill as many Americans as they could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In coming home and in realizing that you were dealing with the PTSD that we mentioned earlier, give our audience, if you would, some sense of what you were going through and how it manifested itself.
So for the first few weeks, I'm very, very happy to be home. But then I found myself over the next few weeks and months and even years just angry and irritable all the time, and I didn't know why. I kind of likened it to being a dog in a cage over in Iraq, where you're shot at and you're mortared and rocketed every single day, and there's nothing really you can do about it a lot of the time, and you just get this feeling of you're just fed up inside, and you come home and you feel like that for a long time, And then I had the typical nightmares and whatnot. But honestly, the biggest part was just there was a feeling of isolation. I had gone through these things overseas, and it feels like a lot of the people around you have no idea what it's like. And that's tough. You know, you leave the service, and you leave all your buddies who have gone through it with you, and you come home to a very isolating society, and it's tough.
And you react to things around you. I think in one of the articles I read about you, the fireworks and things like that can really have a disastrous effect on you.
For a long time, I did, yeah. And thankfully, the PTSD clinic at the VA was life-altering. I went through about a year of that, prolonged exposure therapy and cognitive processing therapy. And that made a huge difference in those things that were disrupting my life, like the fireworks or going into crowded places and whatnot. But for years, you're right, it was very difficult to do those things.
Are you married?
I am.
And how did your wife and family react to all of this?
Yeah, so it was my wife's urging that kind of pushed me into going to get help at the VA. I, like many veterans, I didn't realize that I was going through issues. It's tough to realize that this is what is causing those reactions that you're having. She was very good about it. I got into a lot of fights with my family over things that I should never have been picking fights about. But in hindsight, I was an angry person, and they urged me to go to the VA, and it worked.
What were you angry at having had to go through this experience?
Probably not that. More just you come home and it's very difficult to describe why you come back with these irritable feelings. But that, you know, in the DSM-5, the what we use to diagnose mental illness, feelings of irritability is one of the criteria for PTSD. I can't exactly explain why you feel so irritable, but you do. You come home, and oftentimes that's one of the symptoms you have.
One of the things we had read about people like yourself, when they come back, they are reluctant to say, as they're mustering out, that they've got a problem.
Right.
Because, well, you explain why that is an issue.
Well, it's a few things. You've got myself. I was a Marine. You know, we're very proud. I was in the infantry, so I feel like If I was faced with an issue, I felt like I could just push forward and work through it myself. And then admitting that I needed help, that's a tough thing to do. And PTSD it's a tough issue to admit that you have, because you don't want to admit that there's something wrong with you. There's kind of a stigma involved with it still, and that like I said, there's something wrong with you, there's something deficient with your brain. And a lot of times it takes prompting around you to kind of push you into getting the treatment that you need, which is why I was able to, you know, to do the Post-Dispatch article or this interview, because I thought, you know, if I went through those issues, I guarantee you there are other Marines and soldiers out there who are feeling the same way, and maybe if they hear that you know, it worked for me, that maybe they'll seek help themselves.
Why do you think it is? And I know that you're at the Brown School in social work. You're going to be working with people with PTSD, and once you get your master's degree, which is going to be next year.
Next May, correct.
Why do you think it is that some people come out of the experience, such as you had, and are not affected by it, and others are very clearly affected by it?
That's also a good question. There are a lot of factors that go into that. You know, if some people experience childhood trauma, they might be that's one factor. You're more likely to suffer from PTSD, or if mental illness runs in someone's family, or maybe you just haven't adapted those processing skills yet in life. No one really knows a good answer to that, but I can tell you that it's definitely more prevalent than you might think, and there are probably a good percentage of veterans out there that don't realize they have it yet. And that was one of the reasons why I was able to listen to my wife and go get help, is because I didn't want this to be an issue when I was, you know, an old man and be bitter and angry like the stereotypical PTSD disgruntled veteran you see in the movie.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, what happens if you don't get treatment?
Yeah, that's what I didn't want to know the answer to that, so. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the answers, sadly, is the fact that a number of people come back and take their own lives.
That's a good point. you hear this 22 a day number thrown around.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot of people realize that I think over 60% of the 60% of that number is Vietnam era veterans. You know, and like I said, I didn't want to be a part of that. I didn't want to get to that age and be dealing with these issues.
What specifically is involved in treatment? You've alluded to a couple of things, but where do you start and how do you progress?
Well, you start with the diagnosis. So, you know, you're going through taking surveys with the PTSD clinic, the psychologist and whatnot. And there are a couple of different treatments available, but the two that the VA uses the most would be cognitive processing therapy, where you're discussing different ways that you can process these thoughts, or you know, you're not placing the blame on yourself. You're taught to reframe how you think and process mm-hmm. the events that you saw and what happened to you. And then prolonged exposure therapy, it's very effective, and it's very effective very quickly. And that is where you you sit down and you kind of just describe out loud the events that you saw. And it's intimidating to go through because you don't want to experience that again. But it's very, very effective in lowering your symptoms of PTSD very quickly.
I gather it's a cumulative thing. That is, it's a series of events as opposed to one improvised explosive device going
right.
off. Although I suppose a single event could also trigger it.
I feel that's accurate. I believe that the theory is that it's supposed to be one specific event, but in most of the guys I've talked to, it is an accumulative. It's a series of things that have happened over a long time that just finally build up, and you need to seek help for that.
Yeah. What kinds of things specifically? I mean, seeing a friend, a mm-hmm. buddy killed, I'm sure would be a trigger. But the explosions are the things that we keep coming back to. That is the explosions that are mm-hmm. causing this. The suddenness of it, plus the fact that there is a physical reaction to the
right.
explosion.
And a real feeling of vulnerability that you're yeah. going through every single day. Every time you're on the roads in Iraq and Afghanistan, you don't know what is an IED, improvised explosive device. You don't know where the ambush is. But also the mortars and the rockets that you can hear them being launched. You can hear them through the air, but you don't know where they're going to land.
Yeah.
And when you're exposed to that day after day after day for months and years, it takes its effect on you.
We hear stories of people like yourself, for instance, seeing a parcel or something along mm-hmm. the side of the road
right.
can trigger awful things.
Absolutely. It took years for me to be able to drive down 270 and to not just feel this agitation build up inside me because I might feel boxed in by other cars, and I know logically that one of these cars is not, a car bomb, but it happens inside. You feel it. You feel that feeling of agitation and vulnerability, and you want to get out. Or you see something on the side of the road, and you're not sure what it is. You know that it's not an IED, but that feeling you can't help from welling up inside you.
Processing it
exactly.
has to be difficult. Is guilt a part of it in any sense?
It is. It is, of course. There are several of my friends who did not come home. My brother had a pretty tough tour in Fallujah in 2006, 2007. And we were talking about that earlier today, how several of his friends didn't come home. And there's always a feeling of survivor's guilt. Why did you come home? Why did they not come home? So it is. It's definitely a part of it.
You know, I've spoken over the years, particularly with anniversaries related to World War II, to veterans who fought in that conflict, and I can say without exception that every veteran that I talked to that was in combat, and who ultimately they all lost mm-hmm. lost friends, would not do the interview without weeping, every one of them. That's and we didn't call it PTSD
right.
for these fellows, shell shock or something
yeah.
else. But clearly, they were still impacted 50 years later.
Absolutely.
By what they had seen.
And like I said earlier in the interview, that's something I did not want to be dealing with. I strongly believe that a lot of those World War II guys, the Vietnam era guys, the Korean, that they kind of paved the way for the post 9/11 veterans to be able to get the care and the access in identifying these issues before they become. Issues later in life that they have for these guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful for the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam guys for having to go through what they went through so that we can get the care that we need now.
Well, about that care, once again, just going back a little bit, What was the care like at the VA? We've heard a lot of stories about the VA.
You hear a lot of horror stories about the VA, but I will tell you that every experience I've had at the St. Louis VA has been amazing. I mean, I can say I owe my life to them. The doctors at the PTSD clinic at Jefferson Barracks are phenomenal, and I have nothing but great things to say about them and the VA. At least in St. Louis. I've never been to another VA, but the St. Louis VA is just awesome.
Well, you're a Collinsville native, and you're mm-hmm. going to school at Washington University,
correct.
So the VA is right here. It's close mm-hmm. by. It's those that have to travel long distances
right.
that have the difficulties.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of work to be done, but I think they're doing a good job of letting those guys, you know, go to private clinics if they're unable to get to the bigger hospitals.
Yeah. Do you think that veterans today, we talked about the non-veteran students at mm-hmm. Washington University, do you think that veterans today get the respect that they deserve?
I do. If I can say this, it kind of bothers me when I hear people say things like, you know, we're just not doing enough for our veterans, because I personally feel like the veterans nowadays are treated like rock stars. I cannot imagine what it was like being a Vietnam veteran coming back, and those guys just went through something that I'm grateful I never had to face. But the veterans nowadays, I think that we have a lot of access to quality health care. I think that we are treated great by society. We're treated like heroes, and I'm grateful for it.
We hear things today that we didn't hear not too many years ago, and that is when we see a veteran, we thank them for their service.
Right.
That wasn't uttered not too many years ago.
Right.
In the time that we have left, tell us about what's going on tonight at Washington University. This is a big deal.
It is, and I'm really happy that the school has been so receptive to it. So we have a in line with what we were talking about earlier with trying to get the students at WashU to kind of see veterans as normal everyday people, as their peers. We've put together a panel of combat veterans from we've got a guy from World War II, Korea, Vietnam. We've got two Marines who were in the HBO miniseries Generation Kill, which is probably the most realistic depiction of the Iraq War I've ever seen. And then two Marines from Afghanistan that I worked with when I was a contractor. And they're, you know, I'm going to facilitate a panel discussion where I'm going to ask them questions, and each veteran from each war is going to be able to give a different perspective. And then we've got Senator Claire McCaskill giving an address, and then Judge Drew D. Draper from St. Louis County Circuit Court is sharing her story, which is a pretty remarkable story.
What do you hope to come out of this?
I want the public and who's attending, and I want the students to kind of get some empathy for veterans and see that that we are just like just like you. They say the stars, they're just like us. Well, I want the veterans, the people of WashU, to see that the veterans are their peers, that they're just normal people who have gone through extraordinary events.
When and where is it happening, and can anyone attend?
We are pretty much at full capacity now, but it is at the Anheuser-Busch Hall. That's the law school at WashU. It's from 6 to 7:30 with a reception following in Crowder Hall at the law school.
Right. Well, and you're going to have a full evening tonight, and you graduate in 2017, and then you're going to take your expertise and experience out into the field to help people like yourself.
Exactly. That's my hope, to work with veterans, hopefully of Iraq and Afghanistan, dealing with these reintegration issues.
Well, James Peterson, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Hope you have a great event tonight. It sounds like it's assured with a full house. And once again, we thank you for all you've gone through and all you've done for us.
Thank you, sir. Semper Fi. I appreciate it.
Semper Fi. Yes, sir. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Natalie Martinez, Kim Oswald, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis On the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council Estate Agency. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.